Dr. Ayers, we're learning that there have been excess doses of the Pfizer vaccine that's been distributed already. What can you say about that?
Well, it's not necessarily excess so much as in the manufacturing process. You know, they're guaranteeing that, so that the dose is 0.3 cc's, or it's not a big dose. And it's coming in multi-dose vials. And so in the manufacturing process, they need to at least give us, you know, 1.5 cc's. But they always give you a little bit more. And that's usually the case in most of the pharmaceuticals with injections. Even back in swine flu days in 2009, we could kind of eke out an extra little dose on some of the vials because in manufacturing, you get a little bit extra. So as of today, we were given permission. Instead of 5 doses, we can pull 6. Actually, I've not seen that, but because our pharmacy people are the ones drawing our doses up for us, but they are allowing us, so it's giving us an extra few people that we can vaccinate this first go-around, which is wonderful.
Yeah, that's great. You were the first here in this area to get the vaccine.
Yes, which is a monumental thing since I, you know, just really don't like needles too much, so...
And the reason why you wanted to be the first was to set a good example. Could you talk about that?
Yes. Well, we had done some education, and our department is in charge of the flu shots. And so whenever anybody has over the years a question about the flu shots, I always get emails. And just like with this, when we heard that we were going to be getting vaccine doses, people were sending me emails, and usually they'd have a question, but then always at the end, there was always the question, or a lot of times there was a question, are you going to get the shot? And so, you know, it's one of those things that it is good to set a good example, because I said, well, yes, of course, if it's offered to me, I will take it. And it's just like, you know, with all the hype and all the stuff with the vaccine and all the concerns, you know, it helps if you say, well, nobody wants to be first, you know, if it's something new, nobody wants to be first. So for my part, it was like, yes, this will be a natural thing. I'll take it. So it was trying to set a good example. You're right. I think same thing. I listened to an interview with Dr. Fauci last week, and he said, you know, when he gets it offered, because I don't think he's doing patient care at this stage of the game, but he said, you know, he would gladly do it on television so people can see that, yes, indeed, Dr. Fauci is going to take the vaccine, so maybe it's safe. So
Yes. Now, how are you determining which of your mission partners are going to receive the doses in this first round?
That's not my call, and we're just doing the process. That is determined by the managers of the different units. And so the managers are this is voluntary. We're not forcing anybody to do it. And so there was a survey that got sent out electronically. And so if you emailed back that, yes, I would be willing to take this vaccine, then you showed up and your manager then said, okay, I've got 12 employees, 10 of them want it. We don't know much about the side effects as far as, you know, but we see from the studies that, you know, we should expect our immune system to respond with a fever, achiness, and maybe some chills. And I may not feel like I want to work the next day, usually after the second dose, especially if I'm younger than 55. So our managers said, okay, so if I've got 3 or 4 nurses, I'll let you guys take it on Wednesday. Here's another 2 or 3 to do it on Thursday. Here's another 2 or 3 to do it on Friday. So we stagger the doses out. So that way, if we do see that, not everybody's sick on the same day. Like when we do flu shots, we go to like a department, we push a little cart in there, and we say, okay, everybody roll up your sleeves, and we do you all at one time. We're not doing it with this until we know better.
Right. Will OSF be distributing doses to the general public?
Not that I'm aware of. I think that, you know, it's interesting. We're only responsible for our own people right now. And who knows? I mean, we, you know, back in 2009, OSF helped, you know, we in the health department did a joint clinics together on several occasions, and we're willing and able. It's just we've not been asked. And my understanding is there's a federal contract with, like, the drugstore chains to do all our extended care. We were set up to do that. We actually had our nursing administration next door was identifying nurse shooters and paper pushers to go out into teams. So we were ready to do that, but it looks like we're not going to be asked. I would like to do that to help get this vaccine out, but I'm thinking that that's not a decision that's going to be made locally. And I think, you know, everyone knows our poor health department people have been really overstretched. And so they're probably going to be not doing as much as you would like with their drive-through flu clinics they sometimes do. But I think there's going to be some sort of federal contracting that's going to happen, just like it is with the long-term care folks. And it may be that, you know, like you go to Walgreens or you go to CVS or you go to Hy-Vee, to the pharmacy, and you get your vaccine from them. That may be part of what's going to happen. I don't know. I have no clue.
Dr. Ayers, maybe you could just share with our listeners a little bit about your practice. You're an occupational health physician at St. Mary Medical Center. How long have you been in practice there?
Since 95, I was doing this. I actually started in family practice in Monmouth in 83. Then after joining OSF, after a couple years, they asked me to do this part-time, and then it became actually more than that, and so full-time since 97. And so we do, you know, work injuries, but primarily over the last several years, we do our regulated physicals, our DOT physicals, flight physicals, and we also are in charge then of our own employees and our making sure our vaccines are up to date on all of our own mission partners.
That's right. And you are responsible for helping coordinate and kind of the point person for your planning and outreach to your employees.
Correct.
Yeah. What is that? How has that been going so far?
I think really pretty good. We did a taped interview kind of thing for our own mission partners actually last Friday. And so we went through a lot of sample questions that already I had fielded, you know, is the vaccine safe? Don't you think it was rushed to market too soon? I'm taking certain medicines. Should I take it? It was a nice way to kind of explain how the vaccine works and also answered some of the questions. And a lot of the mission partners over the last 3 days have said, you know, they watched those, and it was a way to kind of convince them that, yes, this was probably a safe thing. And, you know, if, you know, somebody's got to be first, and it just the luck of the draw. And unfortunately, the reason we got the vaccine so soon was our per capita death rate was higher than, say, Peoria County and other counties. And so it's a sobering statistic when you realize how do we get vaccines and some of the other parts of the state didn't. And so we feel it's a responsibility to ourselves, our coworkers, our community to try and lead the way in this, because there's a lot of apprehension out there.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to talk about that real quick. Lots of people are talking about the safety because of the speed at which the vaccine was developed. What kind of assurances are you giving your employees as you lead up to the vaccination campaign?
Sure. I give them so there's a couple things that take a lot of time. So there's two big things that took a lot of time that were different this time around. First off, though, the little messenger RNA inside a little fatty envelope, that technology has been around, and it's been tested, or they were developing it for, you know, some different things. I think rabies they were working on and flu, but it's like no drug company was going to spend a lot of money on stuff. They were kind of percolating, but not really got ready to market yet. So the technology was around where you could just plug in, once you have a genetic sequence, you can just kind of plug it inside these little artificial envelopes. There's a vaccine expert out of Philadelphia that I hear a lot of podcasts and interviews from named Offit, who is on the FDA committee, actually, that approved the vaccines and is approving Moderna, I bet, probably today. But anyway, he developed the second vaccine for the diarrhea in children called rotavirus. And it has saved worldwide lots of children's lives. And so his analogy was, you know, so when he did co-developed the rotavirus vaccine, it took them 3 to 4 years to get 3,000 children to be in their study. And 3 to 4 years for parents to say, you can get an experimental vaccine to my child. Well, compare that to Moderna and Pfizer. When they were asking for volunteers for the COVID vaccine, they got over 70,000 people to volunteer in just a couple weeks. And so the more people you get, the more chance you're going to find side effects. And so that's pretty amazing. And he said, you know, for what took us 3 to 4 years, we had people, you know, somewhat brave folks rolling up their sleeves and say, give me that experimental vaccine, I will take it. So there's shaved years off right there. The other thing is they were manufacturing this stuff at the same time they were testing to see if it works and to see what doses you need to do and that sort of thing. So already they were making this. And it's different than like the flu, where back in swine flu, they were, you know, having to inoculate chicken eggs and wait for the virus to grow. And so it's kind of like growing corn. You can't get the corn harvested sooner than you are set. And so we had to wait. Well, this is all synthetic. So it's just kind of cranked out synthetically off that, putting out that little RNA sequence, making the lipid envelopes. So it's not like we're waiting to inoculate some chicken egg somewhere. So it was a quick process. But at the same time, they were manufacturing vats of this stuff at the same time they were testing. And so the only way you're going to do that as a drug company is if somebody's going to pay. You're not going to risk the future of your drug company or vaccine company. What if we made a mistake and it didn't work? And so now we throw it all away. And so since these folks were kind of guaranteed, you go ahead and make it while we're testing it, so that way on the day after we approve it, we're going to roll it out and start shipping it with FedEx and UPS, which is what they did with Pfizer. So it was already processed, already manufactured in, you know, lots of doses, ready to roll. And the other thing is, so that's two things. So we got the volunteers and a big study early on, lots of volunteers early, and also we were manufacturing while we were testing to see what's going on. The other thing is, this is an emergency use authorization. Usually the FDA kind of takes a while to approve things, especially new vaccines, new technology. And, you know, even Dr. Offit was questioned because they were, you know, there was some media pressure saying the FDA, you know, how come the FDA is taking longer than the UK in Britain, where they've already approved the Pfizer? You know, you guys are taking an extra 2 weeks to look at this same data. You know, can't you guys read faster than that? The approval process was kind of, you know, we're not really FDA. The FDA is okay under the emergency use. And so that's another thing that helps speed this thing along.
You had mentioned side effects, and you talked to your employees about your mission partners about that. What about some of those side effects again? You'd mentioned fever, fatigue.
Yeah, sore arm is probably, you know, like any vaccine, sore arm is going to be a little universal, and that's what I've got. But not enough that I even took an ibuprofen or Tylenol today. So, I mean, it's pretty, you know, I mean, we're all kind of like, it's kind of like, well, how come it didn't hit us? I think if you look at the second dose, you know, and you're looking at maybe 15% or 20% or so. I mean, it's not major, but at the same time, you know, we're going to figure fever, chills, achiness, headache, and so those are the symptoms of COVID. So it's going to be a little tricky. You know, we're going to expect you to have those symptoms from the vaccine for a couple days. But if you start having the symptoms 3 or 4 or 5 days down the road, well, we better test you for COVID or maybe something else is going on. So it's usually that next day is where we're worried about for the most part.
Gotcha. And again, how long before you have to until you take the second dose?
3 weeks. But we get a couple days before and a couple days after. And frankly, you know, if we started vaccinating on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, I think since the FDA is giving us like a 4-day wiggle on either side, when we get the booster dose shipped to us, you know, it may be that we'll plan on just vaccinating everybody on Friday, so then they're you know, if they're not working on Saturday, Sunday, then hey, let's all just do a big one on Friday, and that way you can rest at home on Saturday.
Yes. So, Dr. Ayers, can I ask you about, what about pregnant women or people with allergies?
Very good questions. So the pregnant women, that's a real big question because, you know, really when we test vaccines for women who are pregnant, we want to see if it's safe. And we kind of err on the side of caution. And so you want to see after the baby's delivered, hey, is everybody doing okay? And so we don't have that time lag right here. And so then you have to say, well, do we think it's safe? And just the short answer to that is the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the Maternal Fetal Society that takes care of the high-risk pregnancies have all come out this past weekend with position papers saying this vaccine should be offered to pregnant or breastfeeding moms who are healthcare workers. And you cannot take that back. You need to offer the vaccine to these women, have them think about it, give them the chance to discuss their concerns with their OB or the pediatrician, talk about what they're, you know, talk about the vaccine, how it's going to work. But yet at the end of the day, offer it to them. And that's kind of been our position.
Yes. And how about children?
It's not been tested in kids. So 16-year-olds is kind of where they're at. And I think Moderna's started a trial looking at kids already. It's just they didn't test it enough in the little kids, and so we don't have approval for that. We don't have a child dose. The nice thing, if you think about it, is, you know, usually children are not getting affected by COVID as much as the adults. Yes, occasionally there is a rare, you know, really nasty inflammatory process that really makes some children, usually about age 10, usually more males, and usually in our African American, our Caribbean, and the Latino populations are statistically a little bit higher risk of getting the really serious stuff. But most of the time, little children, they have a snotty nose, and that's about it. But gosh, it's wintertime, and how many little kids in preschool and grade school don't have, you know, every now and then a little snotty nose? So, and that's all that COVID is on them. And that was kind of caught, I think, a lot of folks by surprise because, oh, we didn't think the child was COVID because they didn't seem that sick. And lo and behold, you swab them and there's the virus. So that, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, did we, I had asked about people with allergies.
Oh, yeah, and let's come back to that.
Yeah, should they, how are they handling that? People with, well, not only just severe, but any allergies at all?
I'm holding their hand and we're holding our hand together. So,
yes.
So
yes.
Usually we're required to inquire about that. And usually it's a discussion. And so if I'm allergic to shellfish or peanuts, that doesn't count. If I carry an EpiPen around and every time I get a tetanus shot or a flu shot, I give myself an EpiPen shot, those people we need to have a big talk with. And that's the ones that they're discussing more. So the first day in Britain, when Pfizer was first rolled out, they had two people with anaphylactic type reaction. And it looked like, as best as I can tell, they gave themselves, or they got an EpiPen dose, and that was it. At least the British media has not reported anybody else other than the two on the first day. I did see where in Alaska they had two people that were healthcare workers that had a reaction. And, you know, one of them felt a little lightheaded, a little short of breath. They observed them overnight. One of them got observed overnight in the hospital, but they just observed them. They didn't really see in the press that they did much to them, other than they just were watching them and made sure they were okay. I think basically out of an abundance of caution. If I have someone who is really we're going to be concerned about that has had some issues, we've already talked with our emergency room folks. And, you know, basically you just want to be there in case we need to do an epinephrine treatment or something like that. And none of us want to have that anxiety. And so if we have someone who is unusually concerning to us as we talk to them, you know, we do have the option of not doing the vaccine at all. I mean, you know, again, we're not requiring it. But because I have a couple of mission partners who really want to get the vaccine because of other health issues, and they're a little frightened. And it's like, well, why don't we go, you know, where we're vaccinating is in a conference room close to the emergency room. And we have a deal where we're going to just walk down to the emergency room and just kind of hang out there. So the nurses, and so I can sit and talk with you for about 20 or 30 minutes after we give you your vaccine and make sure that we're in the right proper location in case something happens. And I think that's really the caution from the FDA and everybody is, you know, if you think you've identified someone, and I think the people, I'm not sure that the people in Alaska even had much of a history, which is a little concerning, but you got to be prepared. And, you know, even in our vaccinating room, yes, we're ready. We have supplies in case we run into problems, but we're hoping not. And so, and if we do have someone that's concerning, we had somebody this morning and we sat and talked for a half hour and I kept checking on her, and we have somebody actually watching the group of people who are sitting in chairs after the vaccine, and they're on their phone or they're doing whatever else. But, you know, we have them observed directly by someone just to be sure you're okay. And these people with a bad allergy history, they get to talk with us a little longer than everybody else does.
Yes.
And
yes.
It's okay.
Dr. Ayers, again, thank you so much for being with us today. I've got a couple more questions here.
Okay.
Once someone is vaccinated,
yes,
do they still need to wear a mask and take other precautions?
Good question, and we don't know truly the answer to that, because we know that this vaccine is direct. What they were looking for with the endpoint of this vaccine was prevention of serious illness. I can tell you that a week after my second dose, I have a 95% chance that I will not have a serious COVID infection. I will not be in the ICU on a ventilator. So that's the kind of thing. So that's good news. They did not test. What about, because we know COVID people can sometimes not seem that ill at all and yet have a positive nasal swab. And so the asymptomatic carriers is what that is. So they're the ones spreading it around who seem perfectly fine, but they've now infected everybody. And so we don't know. My immune system may be good enough to protect me from getting sick, but yet not good enough to keep the virus from replicating. There is actually, I saw this morning, they actually have already designed a study trial. I think it's the university, one of the universities in Washington State. So they're going to get, you know, they're going to vaccinate college students in this study. And college students being college students, they're going to go and follow them and then do nasal swabs, looking to see if anybody who's been vaccinated shows up with virus in their nose. And we know, based on a study that came out of one of the universities in the Chicagoland area, that a lot of college students, even if you're in kind of the athletes in a bubble, if you will, the NCAA athletes, where we test them frequently, at least that was the protocols. You know, if we say, no, you can't have large group gatherings, and so they're only having dorm parties with 2 to 4 people, you know, the two roommates and then another couple, we know that those actually were determined to be spreading the virus. And then when you have a non-sanctioned co-ed soccer match that's spread to the rest, to both the male and female athletes in both teams completely, basically, we know college students aren't really compliant. I mean, the U of I found that out when they thought, oh, if we do this massive, you know, saliva testing on everybody, we'll control it. But college students are college students. They're going to be doing stuff. So this is actually a pretty good study, because you've got a group of folks that may not be always going to follow follow the instructions of social distancing, wear your mask, and they're going to get together no matter, even though you tell them not to. And then if they do swab their nose, that'll be the answer. Because once we know that we don't shed anymore, then you could say, well, gosh, I don't need to wear my mask. And so if I'm not going to ever shed again after I get a vaccine, that'd be great. I don't think we have that data yet, and hopefully we'll know. But it wouldn't surprise me if they say, you know what, we didn't win that. You know, this virus is a tricky little thing, and it's going to still live in our nose. So who knows?
And last question. I know you're busy and you have to take off here, but I probably already know the answer to this based on what you've already said, but do we know how long the protection lasts that's provided by the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines?
No. We're hoping 3 to 6 months. 3 months maybe. 3 months for sure. The people who are just in the trial, they're going to be following those folks on down the road. And there's a thing called a memory B and a memory T cell. So the B cells make my antibodies. T cells are in my lymphocytes. So it depends on how well the vaccine stimulates not only my immediate response, so I'm able to kill the virus and keep it at bay, but does it stimulate my memory cells in my immune system that are going to hang out and give me protection the rest of my life? Just like measles, gosh, we can vaccinate you as a child for measles, and it for a lot of folks, that's good for your lifetime. And for the most part, it is. And it, you know, so will we get that good of a response with COVID, or as some of us are wondering, are they going to say, okay, it's time for your annual flu shot, and oh, by the way, here's a COVID we got to do on the other arm as we go forward each fall. So who knows? I hope we get the stimulation of the memory cells so that we don't, you know, so that we don't have to do it annually. But the answer is still out on that one.
Right. Well, Dr. Ayers, I just have one more question here. With the vaccines here, do you sense from your mission partners a kind of a sense of hope, a light at the end of the tunnel?
Yes.
Do you see the stress level going down a little bit?
Yes. I mean, you look at the people. I mean, these poor mission partners have been dealing with people who've gotten, you know, just, I mean, people you wouldn't think would be sick are now very sick. They know they've had family that's gotten sick. And, you know, it's just, it's been an emotional stress for them, not only just the hassle of wearing all the protective equipment and seeing people who, you know, because of the restrictions that were not allowed with families and that sort of thing. I mean, it's been a tough year. And so this is hope. I actually had someone who, you know, he said, no, I want to get this vaccine because, you know, yeah, I may not be, you know, just coming off illness. And no, I want to get it because I don't want to run any chance. I want my chance of staying healthy to be as good as possible. So give it to me, which is counter of what, you know, you're hearing where, oh, people are too afraid to take the vaccine. No, the people who've been fighting this for us are like, no, give this to me. I need it. I've seen enough COVID. I don't want it to. I can see what it can do. And even the long-term effects, I want to stay healthy. I want to do it for my family so I don't bring it home. I want to do it for my community so we can stay healthy and still be able to take care of people for COVID or non-COVID illness. I mean, you know, so it's our responsibility, and also kind of to lead the way. I mean, if you're in a community where the healthcare workers aren't wanting to take the shots, and I'm just Joe on the street, and I'm an accountant or I'm an engineer somewhere, it's going to be like, huh, those people didn't take it. I wonder if it's safe. Do they know something I don't? I mean, it's really just going to add to the fear factor of, you know, gosh, do we really want to take it? No, I got to tell everyone that, you know, when our information came out, we had every vaccine that we thought we were going to get had someone spoken for it 2 days before we started vaccinating. So there was no hesitation in our employee group. The mission partners said, no, this is for us. This is how we're going to get through this whole thing. This is what we've been waiting for. And everybody's been telling us this pandemic will be finally over once we have a successful vaccine and we can get enough of it spread around and we can go see grandma and grandpa in the nursing home again, or we can go to Christmas and Thanksgiving again. This is our answer.
Dr. Ayers, thank you for everything you and your mission partners are doing as we get this vaccine going. We appreciate the time that you took with us today on WGIL.
Thank you very much, and thank you for all that you're doing to spread this information.